Today's topics are really, really important. We're going to be talking about veteran legislative voice, purpose, and agenda. And to discuss that, we have two incredible panelists, Steph Kolota, and also she is a U.S. Army reservist, technician, and founder of Veterans Legislative Voice. And we also have Diana Dennis, who I admire and respect very much when she comes on this show. She's a U.S. Army veteran and a national advocate and activist on women veteran issues. She's a lead administrator for Service, Women Who Serve. I am so happy to have both of you on, and we're going to talk about women's issues as well. But the veteran legislative voice, purpose, and agenda is an extremely important one, especially in the times we're living in right now. So who wants to lead off, Steph or Diana?
Steph, why don't you tell them what's going on right now in the expansion of Veterans Legislative Voice?
Okay. So, hi, it's Stephanie Kolota. So the Veteran Legislative Voice, we just started, we just published our website. So it is www.vetlegislativevoice.org, and we are tracking and watching and pretty much trying to promote any and all bills that will support veterans and current military. Right now, the current focus right now is racism in the military, sexual assault, suicide, and Diana, if I've forgotten one, please forgive me.
No, you're good. Toxic exposures, and they all tend to lend to each other because they're all big issues.
Yes, and toxic leadership is another one that we tend to focus on, because when there is toxic leadership in a organization, it's a hotbed for sexual assault, harassment, suicide, and many other issues that may come around for our military.
Yes. Absolutely. Right now, there is a huge effort underway to, and we're pulling as many organizations on board and entities, and we have a lot of them that have engaged. We have a multi-page request for changes in the Vanessa Guillen Act that has gone out through back channels, as it were, right now, to Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who is the chair of the Senate or the House Armed Services Military Personnel Subcommittee, and Service Women Who Serve, Worth 1020, the Military Women's Coalition Sexual Violence Policy Committee, the Veterans Legislative Voice, which is Steph's group today, Justice for Vanessa Guillen, Invisible Combat, Our Sisters Keeper Movement, Women Veterans Social Justice, Reinvent You, SMW, Sisterhood of Military Women, and Sisterhood of Veterans, all are very large organizations online, have all signed on to this. And basically what we want them to do is really strengthen the current legislation, because we believe that major areas got left out that should be added, and a couple of things that we believe need task forces, as well as to strengthen options. And we'll get into some of those in a little bit. What are the two big areas in that legislation that you see as key, Steph?
For me, it would basically be strengthening and protecting those that are in the most vulnerable positions in the military. So that would be those that go through MEPS and also the recruiting locations. Those individuals do not know. They're typically very young, 17 up to 25, and don't understand the reporting or how they're actually supposed to be treated by recruiters and any other support staff in those locations. So protecting them and educating them on what is supposed to happen and what is not supposed to happen is a very important thing to add into the Vanessa Guillen Act.
Absolutely. And Dr. Arnold, I think that one of the things that you would probably agree with on this is that when we're going in on legislative changes, military nor veterans are very well versed in how legislation works or how it's put together or who you talk to.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, you know, as you were mentioning that, I was thinking that there's also some kind of responsibility in this system for, you know, actually having some kind of mechanism to understand who is it that we're putting in these MEPS centers. You know, who are the recruiters? And are we actually screening them the appropriate way? And are we monitoring them the appropriate way?
Right.
Yeah, I think that, and that's one of the key things that we're asking for. We want them to be better vetted. We want cameras. And, you know, for some people, they're like, really, you want to have cameras? We want the interviews with recruiters digitally taped and put in the file with that recruit. Because there's too many of them taking advantage of young men and women and putting them in dangerous situations and making promises that they can't fulfill. Because once they get somebody's signature on that contract, if it doesn't include all of those things, as you well know, it's not real.
Yes. Yeah, unless it's written, it's not there, right?
Exactly. So we want them held accountable, and we'd like cameras outside the recruiting stations as well as inside. And as well as having those meetings recorded. And we also want them to have a lot of advance information about what is and isn't allowed when they're talking to a recruiter and what is and isn't allowed when they go to MEPS and they're signing in. We've had a lot of young men and women both who have said this created a whole new Facebook group that's got 13,000 members in it came about largely as, and they're almost all active duty. It came about largely because of young women and young men coming forward and saying that they were assaulted during their physical examination at MEPS.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And we were like, how many has this happened to? And the numbers are extraordinary. And so we're like, okay, this absolutely has to be part of the legislative agenda. So now we're working with these young active duty women. And Steph can attest to this. We're bringing them on board and trying to teach them the things that they need to know. What is one of the aspects that we're looking at to get more people involved to deal with their federal and state representatives, Steph?
Yeah, that's absolutely critical because, you know, when you start thinking about it, you know, this is when a young person comes forward and is taking an oath to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And to have a domestic person treat you this way is almost like a terroristic act because they're actually having a direct impact on the strength of our military. Because if you are, you know, doing something to someone that causes psychological trauma and then you send them off into a war zone, that is unconscionable. It just seems like this would be almost an act of terrorism against our own military.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, fundamentally that is wrong and terribly flawed. And ever since we put recruiting stations where there's usually only one person there at any given time, sometimes two, these young people are going in there literally on their own.
And, yes, yes.
And mm-hmm. That's so true. And also, when I was in high school, we had recruiters on our high school all the time. They would come in and bring in McDonald's to offer to the kids to also get them talking about the military. So just imagine a predator in that position. Mm-hmm. They would have so much that they could actually get a hold of to such a vulnerable position with these people, these young adults.
You know, when you're saying that, I was just thinking in the back of my mind, you know, we have that same kind of situation with the churches, right, and people who are in trusted religious positions who, you know, sometimes, you know, participate in that kind of horrible behavior, you know, when they are molesting children and that kind of thing. And, you know, this seems like it would be even a higher calling than sometimes even or at least equivalent to someone who is in that kind of position where there's a trusted position. You have a person who's representing the federal government who is, you know, supposed to be representing the best of our intentions in this nation, doing something that is despicable.
Absolutely. And no one holds them accountable. And when they're not, when they have actually not taken the oath yet, they're not in the military. So when somebody in a position of authority dealing with somebody who's 17 years old, some of them are 16 and 15 because they're going into, a delayed entry program, or they're going into one of the adjunct schools in the prep schools before they would go into like one of the academies. And there's nothing to protect them. There is not a law out there that sets these young people into a place where they can get help. And there's no lawyers provided for them. I mean, it's basically, well, go file a complaint with your police department. What is a 16 or 17-year-old supposed to do in that circumstance? We have put them in an untenable situation. We need to fix this.
Yeah,
this
and that's really
absolutely not okay. So that is a huge thrust of changing this part of the Vanessa Guillen Act, is to add, we'd like to change a lot of things about it, because, you know, when you rush legislation and everybody's trying to get something through really quickly, you tend to miss things. And all of us missed a lot of stuff, and we want to get it fixed now before the next phase. And if we can't, then we want to take that into a new piece of legislation. So what Steph is doing, tell them how you are approaching people and putting the word out to get folks involved with the actual process of the Veterans Legislative Voice Organization.
Well, we put out the word on Facebook. We have Twitter and also Instagram, and then my own website. We introduced them to the type of legislation that would help. And most of these individuals are very passionate because they were either a victim or they knew a victim, or a survivor. And or they're also friends or battle buddies of those that have committed suicide, and they would like to make a change so no one else will have to go through this. So they will also come to me and find out how to make a change. So what we do is we introduce them to the legislation, why it's important, and then they contact their congressman, or either their representative or their senators, and they can call, they'll email, they'll write letters. And we have all different versions and templates and call scripts, so they can call them to ask them to support the legislation that is in the process or haven't been introduced yet, so they can also co-sponsor.
And we're also, one of the things we're doing, Dr. Arnold, is we're looking at preparing the individual packages to teach people how legislation is actually made, so that when they call into an office, they can talk to one of the staff members, and they'll have enough knowledge about how things are made and things are done legislatively, so that they can get participation with staff members, and that they get comfortable with doing that at their, you know, we're trying to get them in slowly. You know, it's like, go to a city council meeting, learn about Robert's Rules, look up who your representatives are in your state and who does, you know, who's on the committee for military and veterans for your state. And then look at the federal folks and see which senator or representative you'd like to be like the babysitter for, to walk through new legislation with,
right.
And get them on board and start talking to them and feeding them information. And if they can stay with one or two topics and they can feed it to them on a regular basis, then those legislative representatives, whether they're in the House or the Senate, will start relying on them for qualitative information. And when they're trying to push something out, they will call Veterans Legislative Voice and say, hey, can you get your team rallied? It looks like we're going to send this to committee. And that's what we're trying to do, is teach people. It's, you know, when I was a kid, they had a thing called How a Bill is Made, and it was goofy. And it was funny, but it really explained how
it did. I know what you're talking about, that little cartoon.
and it was, you know, it was funny, but it was very educational. It was instructive.
Yes.
It literally walked you through, as stupid as all get out, but it walked you through how it's done. And it's valuable today because a lot of folks don't understand it. They think if something passes in the House, it's law.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, oh, we got this law passed. It's like, not really. We're teaching them about language. Steph and I were talking about this yesterday, about the language of a bill, what has to be in there. Things like, if it says can and may, Not only is there not going to be any money behind that legislation if it passes.
No teeth.
There's no incentive for them to do anything in
That's
the bill.
Right. That's right.
Because there's just going to be no force behind it. If it says must and shall, they got to do it, and money will be forthcoming. So when people look at a bill and we're trying to teach them how to read stuff, we say, do they have to go do that? And they're like, yeah, they're going to have to hire all these people and do all this stuff. And we're like, does it say that?
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, it says that. And it's like, no, it doesn't. You know, so we're trying to get this education out there. And, you know, Stephanie's bit off a huge chunk here in terms of doing the education and having people understand, you know, who carries water on this stuff, whether it's at your state level, in your city council, at the federal level. Right now with COVID, we're having to call the state folks or call them when they're back in their district, because nobody's going into D.C. hardly at all except to vote.
Yeah.
And so the staffs aren't there. They're back in the district. So we're like, you know, call San Mateo. You know?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
You need to start linking with the folks at home. We've got a couple of gals up in Chicago, and they're like, well, who do we call in D.C.? I'm like, you don't. Call them in Chicago. That's where their base of operations is now, if people are even in the office. A lot of this is being forwarded to people's home phones, you know, through their district office. So, you know, it's kind of strange right now, Colonel Harold. We're like, okay, this is different. And so teaching people how to do this in a pandemic has been a real treat.
Oh, absolutely. This is fantastic. You know, and one of the things is that, you know, we just went through a cycle today, of course, you know, with the second impeachment trial, and you know, this is a nonpartisan show, so I, you know, it doesn't make a difference to which side of the aisle you're on right now and how you perceive that. You know, Americans have their free will and their own opinions, but now that, you know, this is looks like it's, you know, getting into our rearview mirror, we need to be pushing forward with the business of the country, such as things like this. This legislation needs to be a priority. Because it's directly affecting those people who defend the freedom. We were worried about an insurrection, but we have people who are serving police, the military, every day, men and women who have dedicated their lives to that. And they deserve the honor and the respect, at least not to be abused, when they're going in to actually sign up for these really high-level positions as far as their importance to our country.
Absolutely. And to us, this is a lot of legislation around military, in the active duty, reserve, guard, all of this impacts our national security.
Yes.
If people don't think it doesn't impact national security to start losing young people because they've been abused by recruiters, they're missing the point. If we can't, in a piece of legislation, part of the Vanessa Guillen Act is that people can sue the military. But if they go for veterans benefits afterwards, those monies are recaptured. We need to change the law and the intent of that law to protect those funds and say, no, we're not going to recapture money. If you went through that in the military to bring this forward, you need to be able to keep those monies. And they should be separate from, you know, veterans benefits. So that's part of it, teaching people about bystander complicity, saying you can't watch this stuff go on in the military, in a MEP station, at a recruiting station, and not say something. Bystander complicity has to stop, and we need to hold people accountable. So there's a lot of oars in the water on these issues right now. It's pretty overwhelming. Steph has been doing all kinds of research on toxic exposures. That's another huge one. And racism. I mean, the Secretary of Defense has, I mean, he's done a full stop. He's like, we are going to get to the bottom of this. We are going to get hate groups out of the military. All of this is critical, and all of it is going to be legislatively driven. So very important work that's going on. And Steph has been, she spent the last few weeks dealing with toxic exposures.
Yes.
And she said, I know more about this than I ever wanted to know.
I guess there are a lot of toxic exposures in the legislative process, right?
There you you go. That's true. Between toxic leadership and toxic exposures, we're a bit overwhelmed right now.
You know, but one thing you said, Diana, that I think is really important, and this, you know, earlier you were mentioning that, so if someone is assaulted, like in a MEP station or, you know, by a superior in the military, the next thing they tell them is to go to the police. And I was just thinking about that when you were saying that. So you want me to go from one authoritative body to another. And you know, the likelihood I'll go there, especially if, you know, involves racism, you know, sexual assault, I'm potentially suicidal, or, you know, I've been exposed to toxic exposures, the last place I want to go is into a police station.
Oh, yeah. And that was one of the things that Steph had brought up, too. She said, we've got to find, you know, a parallel ancillary group that can be dealing with these young folks and figure out, and that we want a task force. I mean, that's the bottom line to this part of the legislation, is we want task forces to address these issues so they go in firsthand and learn what's happening at MEPS and at recruiting stations. Because, you know, you can give anecdotal evidence all day long, but if they don't go and see it for themselves, until that legislative group, those congressional task forces went down to Fort Hood, it was really hard for them to understand how bad it was.
Yes.
And when they started walking around down there, it changed their perspective. So a task force is an important tool to get in there and teach our congressional representatives about what's happening. And Steph's just doing a great job on this. I couldn't be happier with the work that's being done.
Okay, so we have 1 minute to go, but give us something. You know, where should people go to find out more information, or a phone number, or some way they can get involved in this? But you know, I know, Diana, before you was mentioning, and you know, a previous show, you know, making sure you contact your legislators and that kind of thing. So what would your advice be now, just for pushing this legislation further?
Well, Steph, I would like you to take that one, because you've been putting together all of the links for everything.
Yes. So on our Facebook page, we have a Facebook group called Veteran Legislative Voice, and then we have a website up, and it's vetslegislativevoice.org. And I have the links of all the other social media that I have already posted.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. We have to really thank our partner, Veteran Legislative Voice, and we wish you all the best. Our nation depends on it to make sure that you are actually there. So, Stephanie and Diana, you know, always too short speaking to you. I always wish I had another hour to talk to you because this is such an important topic, and it's critical for our infrastructure of our military and our nation. So.